At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
As we head into 2022, what economic trends are we bringing along? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Thursday, December the 31st. Good to have you with us on this final day of the year. We are winding down year two of this pandemic economy, but despite COVID cases on the rise, along with flight cancellations, we are in a very different place than we were this time last year. To review the economy in the week that was and the year that was, I'm joined by Neela Richardson at ADP and Heather Long at The Washington Post. Welcome, you two.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Kimberly.
Neela, since I was just talking about those flight cancellations, let's go with an airline analogy. What are some of the economic sort of headwinds following us or pushing us as we go into 2022?
So the headwinds that will keep growth a little more capped, I think, next year is still supply chain shortages and bottlenecks. That's going to persist much longer than anybody wants it to, probably through the first half of 2022 at least. Another headwind will be inflation related to supply. Higher prices definitely put a crimp on spending for consumers. And remember, consumers are 70% of the economy, so higher prices is not great for that. I'm going to add a couple more. Immigration and the lack thereof. I think that's really hurt the labor market and made it less vibrant. And infrastructure, because we haven't done it yet, and it's going to take a lot of congressional attention next year to try and get it done.
Wow, those are several things I want to come back to. But Heather, what about you? What headwinds are you looking at?
I think Neela did a great list. I would just add that I'm still really worried about the struggles for the daycare and the education sector to fully heal. We still are way down on employment in those sectors, more than 10% down in daycare still. And obviously, until we can get the daycare and childcare situation fully stabilized, we will continue to see millions of women who are unable to come back to the workforce. And also, I think with the Federal Reserve planning to raise interest rates, obviously they're doing that to try to control inflation a little bit. But anytime you see a rising rate environment, it tends to spook the stock market, and it tends to put a little bit of, intentionally so, a little bit of the brakes on the housing, home purchases, car purchases, and these sorts of things. So it's just a bit of a rockier environment as we head into 2022.
But not all bad news, because we do have low unemployment, for example. Heather, talk to me about tailwinds pushing us in a good way into 2022.
Yeah, I'm normally an optimist, so I prefer this discussion. Obviously, super strong job market, as you were pointing out. We still have 11 million job openings in this country and for 6.9 million unemployed. So it's still very much a market for job seekers. We're seeing really strong wage increases across the board, especially for people who earn $15 an hour or less and desperately need to have those wage increases. I think the most important factor of all, though, is we are finally, as a nation, beginning to learn to live with this virus. It doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean we don't have pauses and starts and stops. But I think with Omicron, you know, we're starting to get more and more people vaccinated, more and more people understanding how to control the risks a little bit better. And so I am fairly optimistic that 2022 will be the year where it may not totally be behind us, but we can get back to something a lot more normal. And indeed, the pandemic in 1918 took about 3 years to fully subside.
Oof. Well, let's hope we don't have all the after effects of that one coming out of this. Neela, you mentioned infrastructure. The infrastructure bill actually did make it through this year. That money should eventually be coming down the pipeline. What else are you looking at sort of legislatively in the coming year when it comes to the economy?
I think the child care credit, the tax credit, might be something that's still on the docket, and also the social infrastructure that has been so important to manage the pandemic. If you go back to what Heather was saying about child care workers being down and then not having that kind of child care support and infrastructure and daycare facilities for working families, that's a big deal. And it's been a big deal in terms of the labor market. So we're looking to see if that is something that catches fire, but also how companies are transitioning through this time. We know that digital internet broadband has been a huge tool, and it's been widespread in corporate America. Can we get rural America caught up through broadband? Can we make sure that our urban neighborhoods also have widespread internet so that people are not reliant on, you know, parking lots of restaurants to get their internet, right, that it's widespread and available so everyone can participate in this new economy?
So let's look forward to this time next year, and we're looking back at 2022. What do you think is going to be the big economic story that we're going to be like, wow, that happened? Heather, you go first.
Oh boy, crystal balls have been incredibly hard during this pandemic. I think on the optimistic side, I would say I'm pretty confident that the virus will be much less of a discussion in a year from now. On the pessimistic side, I do think it could be a really rough year for stocks. I know you'll do a stock rundown in just a minute. It's been a great year in 2021. But with those interest rates going up and basically the market being really priced for perfection, it just wouldn't take a lot to have a 10% correction or even a potential bear market at some point. And while that's not the end of the world to see stocks go down a little bit, that's not the economy. It does have a big psychological factor on people when they start to see stocks in the red.
What about you, Neela? What do you think we're going to be talking about this time next year?
Well, I agree so much with Heather, but I'm going to disagree a little bit on interest rates because they're so rock bottom low. I mean, they're so low. Yeah, they're going up, but they're not going to go up by much. And definitely they're not going to go back to historical averages of 5 and 6%. So we still have a lot of money slushing around this economy. A lot of money's been made in terms of asset prices. I think that's a big tailwind. And I also think that people are going to get back on planes where we first started. I think tourism is going to be hot, especially in the second half of the year. You got all these early retirees with nothing to do. Digital nomads, remote workers, people are going to travel, and I think that's going to help boost the global economy.
Oh, I know my mom is so looking forward to traveling again. Neela Richardson at ADP and Heather Long at The Washington Post, thank you both so much.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too as well. On Wall Street, a record-setting year for the markets. We'll have the details when we do the numbers.
It was mostly a quiet week, politics-wise, here in Washington, but one piece of so-called must-pass legislation did get done. President Biden signed next year's National Defense Authorization Act into law. It authorizes $770 billion for defense spending. That's a big increase from last year's authorization and $25 billion more than President Biden originally requested. Marketplace's Justin Ho has that story.
The spending law authorizes money for new weapon systems. It gives service members a pay increase. It also expands paid family leave for primary caregivers in the military to 12 weeks, says Ben Geddes at the Bipartisan Policy Center.
Before this, they had 6 weeks of paid parental leave. Secondary caregivers, which are typically men, they only had 3 weeks. And so they also brought that up to 12 weeks.
It's also the first defense spending authorization bill signed into law since the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, says Travis Sharp at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments.
And so there'll be an opportunity for Congress in the year ahead to make decisions about how it wants to move that money around.
Sharp says lawmakers often try to throw as much as they can into the defense spending bill. Compromises are often struck at the last minute. Overall, he says the annual defense authorization bill is considered must-pass legislation.
In fact, this year is the 61st consecutive year that Congress has passed and the president has signed a defense authorization bill.
Part of that is because Congress doesn't want to look soft on defense, and because military spending is tied to jobs throughout the country, says William Hartung at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft.
There's really kind of a bias towards the military and militarization of our budget versus the other needs that are emerging.
Hartung says that's a big reason why this bill passed relatively smoothly when you compare it to recent social spending legislation, which hasn't made it through Congress. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We are starting the new year in the midst of another COVID surge, but with the Omicron variant more infectious, but apparently milder than earlier strains, this wave looks really different. So it's hard to figure out just how COVID will affect the economy going forward. That's a particular challenge for retailers who are always trying to predict what shoppers will want to buy in the future. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports on what that process looks like right now.
I mean, really, there are two parts to this calculation. Retailers are thinking about supply and demand. First, supply. We have seen shortages of all kinds of products. And so as retailers made decisions about what to put on shelves in early 2022, and they have already placed those bets.
I think they placed the bets on this kind of current of optimism and the fear that they don't want to be left in the lurch and not have inventory available to meet demand.
Sonia Lipinski is a managing director at Alex Partners. The shortages could get worse because of Omicron. You need people to work at the factories and pack the boxes and drive the trucks that get products to stores, and people get sick.
I think a lot of that is going to be dependent on how flexible the supply chains are for these retailers.
If factories are shut down in one place, do they have other options? So that's supply. Then we move on to demand. Given the latest surge in COVID cases, are people going to keep shopping? Dana Peterson, chief economist at the Conference Board, says so far it looks like it.
Consumer confidence picked up in both November and December, and that's certainly despite the threat of the latest COVID-19 variant.
Now, some shoppers will change their spending patterns. So if you're no longer going on that winter vacation to St. Lucia, maybe you don't need a new bathing suit. But overall, even in the worst parts of the pandemic, we know that people kept buying stuff, in particular electronics, appliances, and home goods.
So they're buying things because they can't go out and go and travel and go to restaurants and hotels and that sort of thing.
Peterson expects that to continue in 2022. And that's good news for retailers because 2 years into the pandemic, they generally have a sense of which stuff you want. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Coming up,
I think we just kept positive that things would turn around eventually.
A parade walk down memory lane. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones lost 59 points, a tenth of a percent, to end at 36,338. The NASDAQ shed 96 points, six-tenths percent, to finish at 15,644. And the S&P 500 gave back 12 points, two-tenths percent, to close at 4,766. Tesla slowed 1 2/10 percent. The automaker is recalling tens of thousands of its electric vehicles in China, where regulators cited security risks. Many people's thoughts are turning to New Year's resolutions, which might include getting into shape. Even so, home fitness firm Peloton dropped 3 8/10 percent after a downgrade from JMP Securities. Planet Fitness slimmed 8/10 percent. Bond prices rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.51 percent, and you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Artificial intelligence, AI, can often have racial, gender, or other types of bias baked into it. About a year ago, AI researcher Timnit Gebru had a very public separation from Google, where she'd been hired in part to address that. Now Gebru has launched her own research organization aimed at creating change from outside the tech industry. It's called the Distributed AI Research Institute, or DARE. I recently spoke with her on our show Marketplace Tech, where she laid out just what she's trying to do.
We're trying to create our own institute that has a different incentive structure from the ones that already exist, in the hopes that AI research that is done under those different incentive structures has more of a chance of being beneficial to the marginalized communities that are currently harmed, mostly harmed by these companies and this technology.
Can you talk a little bit more about what
incentive structures exist right now, and why do you think they're problematic?
Well, the two incentive structures under which most AI research is currently organized is the two funding entities. One is the Department of Defense, or DARPA, and it's generally because they are more interested in autonomous warfare, honestly. That's my view. And then the second bucket is corporations. They want to figure out how they can make the most money possible. The question is, can we have a research institute that has a completely different incentive structure from the very beginning? And can we organize ourselves like that?
Can you maybe give me some specifics about what this is going to look like in deployment to actually have research based on an alternative incentive structure?
So our goal is to think about, if we were to think about AI that, you know, again, benefits people in marginalized groups, how do we include their voices? How do we make sure that we don't exploit them and pay them for their services? And my hope is once we do that, we can arrive at actual research products that are beneficial to the community. For instance, one of the very first research projects that we worked on is on analyzing the legacy of spatial apartheid using computer vision technology and aerial images of satellite imagery. So spatial apartheid is basically part of apartheid in South Africa. And the lead author, the lead researcher, grew up, she was born and raised in a township. And this is a very personal question and project for her. So I think that when you're not interested primarily in making money for a large corporation or, again, like the military, this is the kind of thing you can study.
What is going to be different about doing this kind of research outside of a big tech firm as opposed to within these companies where you might have better access to what's going on?
If my goal is to work with people in marginalized groups, I should spend more time with that group of people rather than the people in the corporations. The people in the corporations will tell me about what issues they're having in terms of the products that they want to build. But that's not necessarily rooted in the needs of people in the groups that I'm hoping to work with. On the flip side, if I identify something or a technology that has proliferated, sort of like we did before I got fired, my collaborators and I wrote a paper about what's called large language models, a type of language technology that is being used by literally everybody, all large corporations. When we identified the issues and synthesized them in a scientific paper, they freaked out and I got fired. So I am hoping that that's not going to happen at my own research institute, right? So I think that we will have a little bit more freedom to discuss the root of the harms of these technologies.
You did leave Google in a very public way. You say that you were fired. The company claims that you resigned. How has that whole experience shaped the way that you're approaching AI research more broadly?
I think that entire experience of being fired from Google, because I certainly was fired, has strengthened my resolve, to be honest with you, to fight the power that these multinational corporations have. I now more than ever believe that this issue of bias in AI is not just a technical issue. So when you're in these corporations, they want people to believe that it's a technical issue. There's an inevitability that they talk about. But I truly believe that the root of it is the power that these multinational corporations have and the lack of worker power. This, to me, is the root of the harms that we're talking about, whether it's AI or other types of technologies.
Timnit Gebru is the founder of the newly formed Distributed AI Research Institute. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Despite the latest surge, some New Year's Day traditions are still on. The 133rd annual Rose Parade in Pasadena, California is one of them. And the festivities are set to be back in full force with elaborate floats, horse-drawn carriages, and marching bands. Organizers are hoping to make a comeback after the pandemic forced them to cancel the event last year. The pandemic has put things on hold for beloved parades all over the country. So for today's installment of our series, My Economy, we hear from a parade organizer on how they made it through.
Hobie Pileski. I'm a partner in Argonne Parades. We're a full-service parade production company based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We'll handle all aspects of the parade, from operations to coming up with sponsors to organizing the volunteers and getting the parade down the route. We were planning the St. Patrick's Parade, and we started to hear in the news about the COVID situation, and we were getting a little concerned that it would affect us. And in fact, we had to cancel the parade just 3 or 4 days before the parade started. After that, when we started to get a gauge of what the situation really entailed, we did get a little nervous about how it was going to affect the future of our parades for that year. It turns out that we still have not had a full traditional parade since December of 2019. For one of the parades, they decided to do a drive-through parade. It's instead of the spectators on the side of the street, it's the spectators driving down the route. For the other events, they're on a wait and hold pattern. So I think we just kept positive that things would turn around eventually, but you know, had it not been for a grant from the county given to small businesses and a PPP loan, last year would have been very difficult to make it through. During the summer, we saw that there was more holiday, July 4th parades. Also, the city of Atlanta itself started to approve more events, and it gave our clients a little more reassurance that in a few months, they would be able to hold their events. So we have two holiday events that we're doing, and then we've also started planning parades for next year. Each city that we deal with has their own regulations. We have to make sure that we have hand washing stations and enough space for people to line up in. Parade's a really unique, special event, and it's tradition. People go to these every year, and they bring their kids and then their grandkids. And I think people really miss these traditional big events. And it's just one more aspect of just bringing the community back together again.
That was Hobie Pileski with Argonne Parades in Atlanta, Georgia. We can't do this series without you, so let us know how your economy is doing at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, if you're shopping over the holidays, involved one of those buy now, pay later services like Affirm, Klarna, or Afterpay, it may soon show up on your credit report. Starting in 2022, Equifax says it will include so-called BNPL loans on consumer credit reports. The company says it will help people with not much credit history build their scores. That's, of course, if people are able to make those payments on time. If not, this change could mean more negative marks on someone's credit report. Okay, we gotta go. But first, a moment of economic context to end the year. There's a funny thing we do with numbers here in Washington when we talk about the cost of various pieces of legislation. Take, for example, the National Defense Authorization Act Justin was talking about earlier. It comes with a price tag of about $770 billion for 1 year. But other items, such as the Build Back Better Act, get quoted on a 10-year timeline. So you'll hear that it would cost $1.7 trillion. If you were to price out the Build Back Better Act as proposed on an annual basis, it would be about $170 billion a year. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. And I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you Monday. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.